Robots Radio presents
Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast.
I'm not usually a hat fan, but wow.
I would like to buy a dagger.
I'm really sipping on that dumb bitch juice today. And
Yeah, I am. But you know what? Someday I just might grow out of that. But you will never stop being a jerk.
All chocolate cakes are good. You're a fascist.
It's hideous.
It's horrible.
It's home.
Angry white boy, let's go!
Hello, and welcome to Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast. The seemingly harmless sweet treat that packs a punch. That's Chad Echowitz.
And that's Simone LaRue with just the most acute intro we've ever had on this podcast.
I'm cute today. You can see me, and I guess our YouTube listeners can too. I got my hair did. So it's looking, I'm back as a blonde, full time.
Yeah, looking fire.
Yeah.
Getting
and
ready.
And then I've been testing out makeup for a friend's wedding, and I got like a new palette that I was like, maybe I should figure out how
lovely.
To use it before the wedding day, because I'm in the bridal party, so my picture will definitely be taken.
Oh, definitely.
And so I'm looking, like my skin's looking dewy.
You're looking fresh. You're looking well fresh. Like, this is peak Simone right here. This is, damn, caliente, as the kids would call it.
Anyway, long story short, I'm feeling great.
You look great. Thanks. You look fantastic. This is amazing. This is the best glow up ever. You know, if we look at back at where we were this time last year, and it was just doom and gloom.
Just the bags under
now,
our
like,
eyes.
Proper glow up. Proper glow up. It's fantastic. I
and
love
you've got
it.
Your
I'm so
hat.
I'm so happy for you.
I love
you.
I love it.
Yes, I have. I've proper gone sort of like homely. I would call myself sort of the grandmother today, because for our YouTube listeners, I'm surrounded in my blanket.
I love it.
I've got a nice woolly jumper on, and under that I've got another jumper on, and under that I've got a long
sleeve. So Chad's really still
on.
Not turned on his heat.
I refuse. It costs so much, Simone. I've got my nice little peppermint tea here, and I've got my Santa Claus hat
Look
on.
Look at him.
Just grandma. Yeah, I might go scold some youths later.
I like that the Santa hat actually serves the dual purpose of being festive and keeping your head warm as you refuse to turn on your heat.
Yeah, I'm keeping it on after the podcast ends,
okay.
Without a question.
Walking around like an old-timey Victorian man. Will you change into a long shirt?
Yes, I should definitely do that. Could you imagine if I have a Scrooge Christmas? Like the Ghost of Christmas Past carols?
Cool.
And it's like great because like it's really awkward because I'm actually like really nice and like quite sociable, and then there's like loads of people at my funeral and things. And the ghost of Christmas future is like, I did not read the memo.
Yeah, you're actually dead on, man. You're doing great.
Yeah, like, just keep on going what you're doing. And I'm just like, yeah. But that would be a good Christmas. But this week, we are doing a very bad Christmas. Being our Christmas horror week.
Yes.
And what are the two movies that we chose for this wonderful Christmas
So,
horror?
First of all, I was quite horrified to learn that in spite of the festive connotations, these movies actually have very little to do with Christmas.
Yes.
So, that's on us, guys.
This is cheerleading all
Mea
over
culpa.
Again.
But we are doing Ginger Dead Men and Ginger Dead Men 2, Passion of the Crust.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just... I mean, to be fair, okay, really big stretch here, like conservative politician level stretch here. But Passion of the Crust, Jesus Christ, Christmas, like there
yeah,
is a
no,
little
no,
bit
I'm
of a connection
you.
There.
I think gingerbread is inherently you know? Festive, so...
Mm-hmm.
Like,
they're very much.
Sure, this isn't like exactly a Christmas movie, but...
It's
we'll get to where we're going.
It's in the realm.
Speaking of though, what is your favorite baked Christmas treat?
You beat me to the punch there, because I was going to ask you the same thing. So, would you count mince pies as a baked
Absolutely.
Christmas treat? Then that
they're
would be
so
my baked
festive.
Christmas treat of choice. They're so festive. They're so versatile. You can have them cold by themselves. You can have them hot by themselves. You can have them hot with ice cream, custard, or as we found out from
Whipped
you the
cream.
Other week, a heavy cream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fantastic. It's such a versatile little snack. You can have it before. It doesn't have to be a dessert. Mm-hmm. It can be in the middle. It can be an aperitif. It's everything. It is the heartiness of Christmas.
I once made a starter for Christmas that was a puff pastry wrapped around a big slice of camembert and fruit mince on top.
Ooh,
delicious.
Lovely.
So tasty.
That sounds incredible. Yeah. Especially with like the saltiness of the
yeah.
cheese.
Yeah, especially with like a nice camembert, like nothing better.
Oh,
nothing better. I'm not the hugest mince pie fan. Like I'll eat one, but I don't like, they're not something I like go out and buy or like make for myself. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, fair enough. I understand that. I understand that completely. So what is your Christmas baked goods or holiday baked goods of choice?
I mean, my mom's Christmas cake always comes in at number one. I hate Christmas cake every other day of the year, but in like the 5 days sort of on either side of Christmas, I'm like in it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom, like she goes whole hog. She starts her Christmas cakes in October and then just feeds them brandy all the way up until Christmas. So you can get slammed off a slice of that stuff. And it's so delicious.
So basically her cake is like 90% booze and then like 5%. You know,
as it should be. It's so delicious. I don't know. She makes them every year. She's made them this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just...
oh, lovely.
But they're all the way in Portugal, so I can't have my mom's. I've actually still got the one, half of the one from last year in my freezer, and I'm like debating whether it's safe.
I mean, it should be safe. It will be interesting because obviously, as you know, being a scientist, you know, alcohol doesn't really freeze. So it's probably going to have sunk to the bottom of the cake. So you're going to get like a, like quite a, probably like a dry-ish cake on top. And then as soon as you eat
you
that final bottom
fumbles,
piece, you're going to be slammed.
I'll just keep
you're
going to
be fucked. Like a rotisserie chicken, but it's a rotisserie cake.
Otherwise, I love a nice gingerbread cookie, actually.
That was actually going to be my second question for you, is whether you like gingerbread.
Yeah, I like gingerbread. I prefer like ginger snaps, to be honest. Like something a little bit thinner, crisper. But yeah, I think ginger, I mean, it tastes exactly like Christmas. Like that's what Christmas is supposed to taste like.
You're absolutely right. You see, my issue is like I get very overwhelmed with the taste of gingerbread. So like I need like half a gingerbread man, like a gingerbread child would be perfect.
I think both of us aren't like huge sweet tooths anyway. Like you and I are both savory salty people. Bitches.
Love a good pie.
So honestly, for me, like most desserts, like 2-3 bites and I am like happy.
And you're done. Yeah. No, I get you. I get you completely. I mean, I remember it might have been like 2 years ago, Starbucks came out with a gingerbread latte, and that was exceptional.
That sounds good.
That was
that
one of the
tasty.
Best latte, like Christmas lattes of all
Starbucks
time.
Is slowly
so
taking over Cape Town. Well, not taking over, but it's popping up in more and more places around Cape Town. And I refuse out of principle because their coffee is terrible.
I completely understand. Yes, they burn the beans on purpose. It's outrageous.
Oh, it's disgusting. No wonder you have to pump it full of sugar to make it taste good. Anyway, I just refuse. There's like Cape Town has a fantastic coffee culture with like genuinely like world-class baristas. Like why am I going to Starbucks?
Yes. Exactly. It's more for the name than anything than like you clearly don't like coffee if you go to Starbucks.
Exactly.
Like that's just a fact.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are you drinking? Shall we move swiftly along?
Yes, let's move swiftly along.
I'm sure
people are anxious
to
sleigh bells ringing.
How much we loved
of course.
Ginger Dead Man.
Of course. So today I'm drinking what I call White Woman at a Tennis Club on Summer's Day. So just from the name, what do you guess that is? It's not a cocktail, just warning you now. It's just like two ingredients. Okay, but what
white
do you
woman
think that is?
At a tennis club.
On a summer's day.
Is it like a gin and lemonade combination?
Yes, spot on, Simone. Very well done. But what makes it White Woman on a Summer's Day at a Tennis Club is that it's pink gin and it's diet lemonade.
Love that for you. Yep.
Yeah. So after this, I'm going to go and chat to my rich husband, who is a Kennedy.
Oh.
And then, and then we're going to play a game of doubles with the Hamptons. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go to our separate bedrooms and wish for a life that we never had.
I love that journey for you.
It's perfect. So what are you drinking?
I'm just having a plain old red wine. So,
nice.
I mean, I didn't pay very much for this, so this is not a fancy tennis club red wine.
Right.
This is, I would say, a dive bar red wine. But, like, you buy the nicer one on the menu.
Yes. Not the one that's going to, like, leave your teeth stained and your lips stained the next morning.
Not the one that's clearly just, like, they emptied all the half-empty wine bottles into one jug and they're pouring that as the house blend.
Yes.
I swear to God,
hey,
I've seen
reuse,
it happen.
Reduce, recycle. Really?
Well, I've seen
no
it,
way.
But, like,
that's shocking.
You know, you sip some wine and you're like,
you've tasted
this
it.
Is not a blend that a human being made on purpose.
I think you should do your own sort of like documentary show where it's like a tour of the worst wine farms and worst wine places in South Africa.
I would love to do a tour of diving pubs around South Africa.
It would be so
good. To be honest.
It would be so good.
And order like the cheapest glass of wine on every menu.
Yes. And give it, like, proper in-depth reviews. Like, go to the bartender, ask them to show you where they, like, get the wine from. Then you go to the farm and you taste the grapes and it's, like, really fucking Savannah-esque. Like, the grapes are dying on the vine and it's just awful. It would be so good. It's like, hello, welcome. My name is Simone LaRue and today we're at Umzali.
No, I'm not pronouncing it correctly. I can't.
But the wine will just be as bad as my gentrification. right, so we agreed that you would do Ginger Dead 1, and I will follow up with Ginger Dead 2. So I am excited to hear your plot, because there was one.
Yes, there was a plot. Probably.
Probably.
Okay, our story opens with serial killer Millard Findlemeyer. He is shooting up a diner, and he kills Sarah Lee, played by Robin Sidney. He kills her father and her brother before being caught by the police. She survives, obviously, and he is sent to the electric chair. Cut to, I guess, like a year later, Sarah Lee is working in her father's bakery that she now owns. She's still very sad that she, you know, is struggling with the loss of her dad and her brother. She works with Brock Fields, played by Jonathan Chase, and the two of them are running the bakery, but they are struggling. The rich guy in town, Jimmy Dean, played by Larry Cedar, is trying to convince her to sell the bakery for a very low price because he wants to open up a restaurant across the way, and he doesn't want her stealing his customers. She is refusing because this is the only link that she has back to her dad and her brother. One night, she gets a mysterious package out the back door, but it's labeled gingerbread spice. And she's like, well, okay. This just so happens to be right after Millard Findlemeyer has died. let's just say the spices look ashy. her dumb assistant, coworker Brock, cuts his hand. Some of it gets into the spice. They decide to still use it anyway. Like, it's never even a question. And she makes a gingerbread man for her bakery. Just one single one in her industrial-sized oven.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. The spirit of Millard Findlemeyer, still voiced by Gary Busey, is back in gingerbread form, and he's here to wreak havoc around the bakery. Shenanigans ensue. In comes Lorna Dean, Jimmy Dean's daughter, played by Alexia Ailman. She's there to try and, like, convince Sarah to sell the bakery by, like, you know, planting a rat in there so the price goes down. Her boyfriend comes through. He's, what's his name? Ryan Locke, played by Amos Cadbury. He's, like, a bad boy. And Lorna doesn't really like him. She just likes being seen with him. But actually, Ryan and Sarah hit... No, sorry. Amos Cadbury is his name.
Right.
His name's...
Ryan
Locke plays Amos Cadbury.
Yes.
I'm played so sorry.
By, yes, yes. I thought it was the other way around, too. Like, when you said that, it made complete sense.
But now Amos Cadbury is a ridiculous name, so it does make sense. Sarah and Amos are kind of hitting it off, kind of vibing. Meanwhile, everyone's dying around them. The phone lines have been cut. Sarah's cell phone doesn't work. They couldn't possibly call the police, even though it's very clear that they're able to get in and out of the bakery constantly, and they just stay there.
Eventually,
Brock returns from WrestleMania, where he was watching and participating as an amateur wrestler called the Butcher Baker, and he finally wrestles the Ginger Dead Man into submission and eats him. You'd think problem solved, but oh no, now Millard is possessing Brock. Oh no, Brock? Brick. Brick. Yeah.
Is it not Brock? No, that's outrageous.
Now he's possessing Brick, and he wreaks havoc for a while, and then eventually they manage to shove him into the oven, and Millard is no more. Or is he?
Ooh.
The end.
Yeah, this one, I, in the grander context, I enjoyed this one. Sort of, you know, when I sat down to watch this and I saw that it was an hour long, I was like, yes,
Perfect. This
is great. Usually for a podcast where the movies are usually like 2 hours, not because they need the time to fill, but because the movies are terrible. Like, having an hour long movie, great.
Flawless.
That's exactly what I need. Just Yeah, wonderful. Plus, like, the ridiculousness of it just, like, made me really happy until, obviously, the second one. And then I saw it in its entirety and I was like, oh, they weren't trying to be ridiculous. This is all just awful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They just weren't trying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, this movie is so frustrating in a whole, in a host of different ways. Like you said in the opening, in your synopsis, like, they bleed directly into the dough and everyone's like, yep, absolutely fine.
They don't even question it. They don't even question it. And also, he cuts his hand and then turns and holds it over the box. Like, the floor is right there. Just bleed onto the floor.
Yes, absolutely. Ridiculous.
And at no point is she like, oh, we should, like, this is a serious food safety issue. You've just bled into this.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very strange. And then, not only that, when the delivery gets delivered, when the ashes of the dead guy get delivered, it's Sarah sees the woman walking behind the, like, the corner, and she's in a fucking cape and hood. Like, that's no baker. Like, she even says, oh, there was a delivery, the delivery man was here, and it's like, no, you clearly know that's evil. Like, everyone knows anyone wearing a cape and a hood is evil.
Like, and you're a bakery. Like, surely you have your own cinnamon and ginger and cloves and nutmeg and cardamom or whatever else you put in your gingerbread. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you buying a premix? No wonder your bakery's going under if this is the level of laziness.
Absolutely. And speaking of laziness, she doesn't even know what her inventory is. Yeah. She just, like, picks up a package and it's just like, yep, I guess I ordered this.
Who's running this business?
What?
Girl, just let the dude buy it off you. You're clearly bad at it. She bakes one gingerbread man. And it's like 6 in the evening. Like, what's the plan?
Yeah. And it's giant. Yeah. Like, who's going to buy that big gingerbread man?
Is she making,
like
a window
that?
Display? Or I don't know. I was just like, girl, you're a mess.
She is a mess. What did we think of the actual ginger dead man himself, or itself, rather?
I think, you know, after Leprechaun, now I'm sure this is not a genre I like. I really don't enjoy this, like, creature feature of some ridiculous thing running around, cackling and killing people. Like, I find it intensely annoying.
It's very, very tiresome. Like, you know, at least in the Leprechaun, you know, for the first, like, 10, 15 minutes, I really appreciated
the legality.
The puns and stuff. Well, yes, and the legality of it. I mean, that's just, that gets me excited all over. But it was more like the puns as well, like when they were murdering. It's sort of like, oh, no one's going to get my lucky charms. And it's like, stab, cool, that's fine, that's funny as hell. But this one, it was all like, oh, yeah, get me in my sweet box. And it was, like, really sexual.
It was very,
like,
gross. It was just, and it's Gary really Busey. Weird. Like, I did not, okay, first of all, I did not expect to see any famous people in this. And then it starts, and, like, first scene, I was like, is that Gary Busey?
What I love about this as well is he wasn't even top billing. Like, if you watch the ridiculous credits for this, he's, like, the last name that comes up. And it's like, what the fuck?
I guess it was supposed to be, like, and the big star, like, on a stage show or something, you know? The leads come out last. But
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes.
Wow. Yeah. Gary Busey did not have a good day with this one. This is a poor choice, even for Gary Busey.
Wouldn't you, as an aging actor, like, you've done your serious roles, you've done your fun roles, you know, you're just coasting now, you've got enough royalties to live the rest of your life in comfort and harmony, and they're like, hey, we want you to play a possessed, murderous baked good.
Yeah.
You'd snap it up.
You're absolutely right, actually. Sorry. Yeah, they wouldn't even have to finish that sentence. I would just, possessed, yep, I'm in, done. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I think that is one of the joys of when you've been a character actor for so long in some big names and big movies and stuff, is that you can live off those royalties. And then after that, you're just going to have fun with your projects. Yeah, absolutely. Like, what a dream that would be. I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years we start to see, like, Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt doing just the most ridiculous roles.
I'm so excited.
And I would be so excited.
I'm excited for Brad Pitt's foray into horror, to be honest. Like, I mean, he's been there before. He can come back. Come back to us, Brad.
Yes. But in ridiculous ways. Like, I want him to, I want to see him as, like, a possessed Christmas cat. I want to see him voicing Clifford the Big Red Dog, where he barks. He doesn't even have a word. Simone, he grows with the love that you feel in your heart. I know he would be the size of a newt for you, you cold Grinch.
Wow, okay. I got defensive very quickly.
He's a giant red dog, Simone.
I just don't think that a live-action movie was necessary, but I guess they have to revive the IP.
Definitely not. Yeah, yeah, that's very, very true. But, I mean, we're probably going to watch it. Well, at least
you will.
I will. Yeah, so what else can really be said about this movie?
You know, if you think about it, really, this movie is just a romance that's vaguely interrupted by a gingerbread man. You know, Sarah and Amos, like, they lock eyes and they...
Oh, they hit it off.
They hit it off. You know, good for those two crazy kids.
It's... Like, I wish them the best of luck. I hope that they can get it together throughout the rest of their time together in Texas. It's a lovely romance.
Yeah, good for
You're
them.
Absolutely right. You good are true. You, yeah. Because, like you said, I mean, the ginger dead man is actually very little inconvenience. Like, only... One person dies?
Yeah.
One person dies.
Yeah, and then he, like, chops off another gal's fingers. No, two people die.
Yeah,
two people die. The rich guy and then the rich gal. His daughter.
Yes,
the old lady, like,
yes.
God knows he tries to kill her enough times, but she is preserved purely on booze.
Exactly. And then the wonderful Hispanic baker who was also in the place, she just gets, you know, decorated in a really sexual way as well. Like, she gets stabbed, but then she's decorated
fine.
And she's fine because she's put in a freezer.
Yeah.
Like, in effect, the ginger dead man is actually a pretty shitty killer.
He's not great. I mean, I guess they try to rectify it with more interesting kills in the second one, which we will get into. But, yeah, in this, he's pretty tame, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a very chill killer. Like, he's just to terrorize Sarah, and he doesn't do a great job at
the
that.
The main thing that horrified me was when Brick's, like, eating him, which, like, I don't know if that would be my first approach for, like, a living sentient gingerbread man. But, like, there's stuff inside of him. Like, it's gory.
Yeah. It's goo. It's gooey. Yeah. It's very nasty. I was proper, like, grossed out by that
power
scene.
Power to Brick for,
nasty.
For carrying on through it, but my guy...
Yeah. Actually, you know, like, in the original seasons of Survivor and stuff, and I'm sure even into the later seasons, when they would, like, force them to eat things... I think, like, this would be a really wonderful genre of that challenge where it's like, oh, just a simple gingerbread man. Please eat it. Come on down, contestant. And then
and
they eat it
bleeds.
And it's like a gooey center. Yeah, and it bleeds. That would do me. Like, I would rather eat like a
imagine
bug.
Imagine biting into
than
a
that.
Biscuit
like, the
and there's just like meat in the middle.
No, that would throw me off. Like, I would rather take a sheep's eyeball than because I know the consistency.
What you're getting
I know
into.
What it's going to be. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, the
absolutely.
Texture and congruency would really fuck with me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you have a golden nugget
for
this one?
Oh, I do,
I mean,
Chad. But it's ironic.
Oh, okay. I love
my favorite thing in this whole movie is the terrible sign above the bakery. They show several establishing shots of the front of the bakery, and the sign is horrific. It looks like a third grader made it. It's like, it says, it just says bakery across. It's diagonal across, but not like a centered diagonal, like kind of off center. And
off
then
kilter.
There's
yeah.
like a big ass B, and then someone kind of ran out of space towards the end, and it's like someone tried to make bubble letters. They're not good. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by this choice.
You know, there are so many great choices in this, just like that. It is great. I thought when they opened up, like, and they showed that first establishing shot of the bakery, and it said Betty's Bakery. I thought it said Belly's Bakery, because it's just so badly done.
It's terrible.
It's awful. And then, speaking of the sign, you've just reminded me of one of my favorite parts of the film. So, obviously, you know, the rich guy has the bakery on the other side of the road, and the drunk mom comes out with a shotgun, and she shoots at the sign with a shotgun from across the road, and it precisely just clips the edge of the sign, causing it to fall down.
Good for her.
No property damage, no shattered windows, just, like, with a shotgun, the least precise of all weapons, she is able to get that, like... Good on her. Good drunk aiming. Mm-hmm. Very impressive. So I completely agree. It's a fascinating movie from a study of budget more than anything.
And then I'm endlessly fascinated by Sarah's choice to make one gingerbread man at 6 p.m. in the evening for her whole bakery. I love it.
Maybe
I
all
love
the
it.
Kids in
I
the
love
town.
Everything about
I'm just
this. It was just, none of it was thought through.
It's great.
They were like, nah, it's a gingerbread man that kills people. And then they just ran with that and didn't think about anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much, I can imagine, you know, when we were talking on our daughter's rom-com week, about how Ashton Kutcher was like supposed to be a creative person and he would just come out with the ideas for a movie, for a book. And he was going to be hired as a creative on that. That's what this film felt like. It was like someone was given the chance to create an idea and then had no sort of, you know,
it's
logic
exactly
with how
like
it's going to go.
The Christmas Prince's understanding of how journalism works.
Exactly, exactly. So it was just, yep.
Just no, I'm just going to close my bakery at six.
Yeah. Yeah, after making one giant gingerbread man. Insanity, yeah. My golden nugget to be Angus or whatever his name is, Abernathy. Richard Locke, whatever his name is. The love interest. Amos, thank you. Amos is spectacular because he's like this badass guy who's actually really sensitive and sweet and like really romantic. His is the most genuine performance in this whole
movie.
Oh, yeah,
he's actually...
And I love him
for like,
that.
I could see it.
Yeah, yeah, he's really cool. It's like, oh, I'm a badass, but actually I'm very sensitive. And I was like, yes, I can
see that.
Yes,
you
are. I believe it. Yeah. And I loved him for that. And it was like, yeah, of course you're going to go for him, Sarah. He's the most eligible bachelor in this whole town.
Beautiful.
Yes. Hit that.
Hit it hard, girl.
Yeah. And so I'm taking it you would never watch this again in your life, ever.
Yeah, no. I didn't have fun. It wasn't a fun time for me.
No. Yeah.
I wish everyone who made this the best. But again, this is just clearly not my genre. Like, I think if this is the kind of thing you enjoy, like if you liked Leprechaun and you like Chucky or like other shit like that, like maybe this is for you. Like, it just, it does not hit my brain right.
No, I completely agree with you. I feel, very weird about these movies. But you know what? There is someone out there who likes them and God bless you. Go and try it out. But it's as well, dog, it's going to be a no from me. Definitely don't feel this, and not feeling that I would ever watch this again in under any circumstances whatsoever. I can't think of a single context in which I'd watch this.
No, it's, I don't know. It wasn't even like so bad. It was good. It was just
It was just bad all the way through.
Following is a public service announcement from the Starter Set Dungeons and Dragons podcast. This is your D&D campaign. This is the Starter Set Podcast.
You know how, like, poison frogs don't lick each other's backs?
So, it's Howl's Moving Castle with a face.
Hey there, I'm Great Mandibles.
Because one of the party speaks abyssal. You're all going to die.
And then adventure falls into your lap. Plop.
This is your D&D campaign after listening to the Starter Set Podcast. So join Sam and Ed every Friday on the Starter Set Podcast for prime Dungeons & Dragons content. Any questions?
Well, shall we now talk about an even worse film, if it can be possible?
So in context for our listeners, I really struggled to find a copy of this film that I could watch.
Yes.
And Chad came through this morning and he was like, oh, I found a version for you. And I was furious because I was really excited to not watch it.
Simone, I probably would have, because I watched this film already, I would have probably bought a copy and flown it to you today to watch, rather than let you get away with not having to watch this film when I have. So it was never going to happen. You were going to watch this movie by hook or by crook.
I would have probably videoed.
Yes, yes, you would, which I think I think this episode has to end with it if we can. It might be difficult, but if we can, we should end with that song.
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
You're right.
But,
I agree.
Yeah, no, I would have never, like, I probably would have made you watch it. I would have videoed it on my phone and made you watch it through WhatsApp. Just like 5-minute piece at a time.
That's so nice of you. I mean, at least two of those 5-minute pieces would have been the fucking intro with that terrible song.
Oh my God.
It was so long. I was incredible. Like, why am I actually sitting and watching this? I just skipped it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I think the movie was 1 hour and 12 minutes long. And I think that was about 12 minutes of the movie was just a recap of the first movie and that song.
Exhausting.
Yeah, but let's find a plot, shall we?
Yeah, this was a little bit more complex plot-wise, so...
Yes, yes. I like how you said complex, just not in existence. So, after the events of the first Ginger Dead Man, this is a completely different movie. The only thing that ties the two movies together is that Sarah Lee, played by Robin Sidney, sends a box of cookies to her cousin in LA. The cousin is one Polly Bunderhoff, played by Michelle Bauer, who is a caterer on the set of Tiny Toys 9. This is the latest film from the production studios of Cheatham's Movies, which finds its USP in low-budget, outrageous horror films. Cheatham's is now being run by Kelvin Cheatham, played by Kevin Moetzi, who is the son of the founder of the studio. Unfortunately, the studio isn't doing too well right now. Under Kevin's leadership, the studio has gone broke, and the movies they are creating just don't contain the magic of the earlier films of the studio's heyday. To make matters worse, the script for Tiny Toys 9 has been leaked onto the internet, and critics such as Demon Hunter 13 are just tearing it apart. So, things get even worse when Polly opens the box of cookies from her cousin to see a gingerbread man. Ooh. No one takes notice of this, and the gingerbread man, who we know is the Ginger Dead Man, comes to life and starts to wreak havoc on the movie studio. The Ginger Dead Man now wants to perform a satanic ritual in order to get back into a human body. In order to do so, he must kill 5 people. As you can imagine, he is able to do this. There is no point in going into the murders because they're super dumb and pretty homophobic at points.
Extremely.
So I'm just going to skip over that.
In fact, let's put a trigger warning just at the top here. Homophobia.
Yes. Yes.
Rape.
Abounds. Yes, and rape. I'm sure we're going to go into it because it is just deplorable. But in the meantime, while all this is happening, Kelvin is joined on set by Heather, played by Kelsey Sanders, and Tommy Hines, played by Joseph Porter. Heather works for Falling Rainbows, which is a charity that grants terminally ill children their dying wishes. Tommy's dying wish is to see Cheatham Studios, as he is such a big fan. As they go around the studio, Heather and Kelvin start to develop feelings for each other, and they eventually hook up. Once the Ginger Dead Man has finished killing the 5 people he needs, he starts to perform the ritual. All the while, Heather, Kelvin, and Tommy are trapped with the possessed cookie. Unfortunately, something goes wrong, and instead of putting him in a human body, he reanimates all of the puppets which were the satanic stars of the Tiny Toys 9. In return for giving them the gift of sentience, the toys crucify the gingerbread man, and that's not a joke. They literally crucify him.
Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, exactly. It fits with the title. Thank God they shoehorned that
in. Oh, I'm so glad.
I'm so happy. So at that point, one of the actors from the film comes around and shoots all the toys and the Ginger Dead Man with an AK-47, and they all die somehow. You would think this would be the end, but no. That's when Tommy reveals himself to actually be Demon Hunter 13.
What?
You know, that Chekhov's gun that we were all waiting for right at the beginning. It's nuts. So he was the critic who was slating the Cheatham's films. He now wants to kill Kelvin and Heather for good measure for what he did. Kelvin did to Tommy's beloved film genre. Somehow, Heather is able to whack him in the head and he dies too. All seems right in the world until we see the final scene where a homeless person is wandering by the dumpsters of the studio. He is looking for some food when suddenly he stumbles upon the burned, shot, and crucified Ginger Dead Man. He takes a bite and boom, becomes the Ginger Dead Man, leaving room for the third installment of these movies, Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver. The end.
I'm exhausted. There are so many of these movies, Chad.
I'm so glad that you didn't say we could do, like, a trilogy episode or whatever. I'm so glad you, like, limited us to the two.
Me too. I'm very happy.
Could you imagine if we had to do number 3 and then there's a 4, which is about weed.
Yeah, versus
he, like,
the
mixes with a bong. Yeah.
Cool.
Ginger Dead. Oh, it's funny because weed is very funny.
It sure is, Chad.
Love it. Love it. So I don't think it's fair to give you a cliffhanger for this one because it was so hard to find. But should you choose to want to use the one, it's this one, which is the throwaway line where he's talking to Heather, where Kelvin is talking to Heather, and he goes, that story is only half true. I was acquitted of all charges, and they were dropped. And it's like, this whole movie is an issue in itself.
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't even know where to start, really. Like,
it's just all...
Tell me your initial
very
thoughts.
Weird and deeply upsetting. Like, in this, he masturbates while watching a couple have sex. The couple having sex, was clearly a very coercive situation where it was not consensual for the man, really.
No.
And then he kills a gay man by anally raping him with a curling iron.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah. It's all awful.
It's horrific.
It's all awful.
It's not funny. You're just like, oh God, this was made more recently than I would like.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think better of people by 2008. And yet, the human race just keeps just throwing us these curveballs, and it's all wonderful.
Love this for us.
Love this for us. Yeah, it's wonderful. So I think the ginger dead man in this one is a lot more creepy and a lot less fun.
Yeah, he's not
like
fun.
In the first one. No, in the first one, he's like kind of cute, and you're just like, oh, these are cute puns. In the second one, it's just like really sexual, and he's just fucking awful. Like, the whole time, just, like, not appealing at all.
I think some of the, like, success with some of the stuff is, like, mm-hmm. you're a little bit cheering for the bad guy, right? Like, in Leprechaun, you're like, yeah, he's kind of got a case, actually, and these characters are dumb. Or in Chucky, even, you're like, oh, yeah, I see it. And then, like, this guy, you're just like, I mean, these characters are the worst, but this guy is the worst. Mm.
Yeah, all of them are awful, and you can't root for anyone. Like, you don't want anyone to survive, because they all suck, and you don't want the bad guy to kill everyone, because he sucks just as bad.
And then, so the opening scene is them, like, filming this terrible movie, and much like you, I was probably like, no, this is, like, a fake thing. Like, this is, like, a movie scene. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it was a very long one. Like, it was a very long scene. Mm-hmm. And, like, every second that passed, I was like, oh, God, is this the movie?
Is this the movie?
Is this the acting that I'm going to have to deal with?
And, I mean, in a way, you were right, because the acting does not improve.
No, the practical effects were slightly better, I guess.
Absolutely. Like, I think the big thing for me, and what, like, I was just sitting there, and I think this is what sort of took me out of the movie, was I was just constantly like, why is any of this happening, and how does this relate to the first one, and how did the ginger dead man come back? Like, all of it was just completely insane.
And they didn't bother to explain it, which, like, I can respect, but I didn't love. Because, like, also part of the fun of this is, like, the lore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's none of that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's the reason why you go back and watch, like, Halloween 1 is so that you can catch up on the lore, so that by Halloween Kills, you know the little details. With this, it's sort of like, oh, she's a cousin of the baker, and the baker sent some baked goods, and that apparently is enough connection to start a second film. And you're like, what? No. How? Why? Why is he killing these people? the whole point of the Ginger Dead Man 1 was that he wanted revenge on Sarah. There is literally no reason why he's killing these people in the second one.
No, it makes no sense. He's just angry. I guess he wants a human form so he can go back and terrorize Sarah.
And rob another small cafe.
I don't know. I didn't understand the point of any of this. There was an animatronic penis that talked, and I can never unsee it.
No, that was awful. So for our listeners who I really hope will never watch this movie, I don't want to curse you with that. There is a possessed demonic dildo as one of the tiny toys.
There's another one called Shit for Brains that literally has shit for brains
on its head, And it's all pretty great. It's all pretty funny stuff, really, if you think about it. It's all good comedy if you're
12.
the thing that I wanted to ask you is, like, the B plot, the whole Kelvin and Heather of it all, and the tiny tots thing. So first of all, that guy is a grown adult, right? Like, I wasn't imagining that kid was an adult.
I mean, I guess, you know, grown adults should also get nice things too if they're struggling with an illness.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was like, oh, maybe it's like a Gypsy Rose situation, you know, like he's faking it, and he's actually 30 when he's saying he's, like, 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But no, it was much worse. It was an angry reviewer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just, like, the beginning and conception of the whole incel movement was this guy.
Oh, absolutely. And also, like, he was in it for the long haul. Like, Heather gives, like, a whole monologue about how she's taken him to so many conventions and fairs, and it's like, oh, so you've been faking it, like, for a while just to get onto this set, this porous set that any asshole can walk onto?
The gate is just open. There's no one, like guarding
no
it.
No one cares,
nothing.
Guy.
Yeah, like, you could just walk in and just shoot up everyone. Clearly, like, no one gives a crap. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And also, like, you know, it's for last wishes of children, but apparently Heather's been with this dude for, like, the longest time.
So how many last wishes does one get with this organization?
It's been, well, that's the thing, right? So he obviously was a kid when this whole thing started out. Like, you know, he was like, oh, my last wish is to go to a fun fair. And then he just kept not dying.
I mean, I guess that's awkward.
Yeah, exactly. And they were like, well, I guess we kind of have to keep watching, giving you last wishes because you just don't die. And now that's why he's an adult now. That's why he looks, you know, 29, 30.
I think there should be some sort of three strikes.
Because he just won't die.
Look, I don't know how it works. I think the Make-A-Wish Foundation does really beautiful work, so I don't want to shit on that.
And there's Simone. She's the auditor for Make-A-Wish Foundation. She's like, three strikes, guys. Come on.
Someone's got to do it, okay? Someone's got to tell the sick kids, no, it's going to be me.
Yeah, yeah. It's called the Last Wish Foundation, not the Last Wishes Foundation.
You've got your wish,
I think,
kid.
You'll find. You're going around to their houses like 6 months after they've died just to verify that they have indeed died. Just like really reopening
it's
those wounds.
You got your wish. The rest is up to you. Die or don't. Like, it's not my problem. I would never.
That would be so funny. That would be so funny. You're just like the sick of seeing The Rock because every kid is like asking for The Rock, and you're just like, fucking Dwayne again.
Hi, Dwayne.
Can we not?
Yeah. No, I've tried your tequila before. I'm working, so. Yep.
I love that. I love that for you. And in my head, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is just constantly trying to like hit on you, even though he's like
just
married
and got two kids. Just
trying
to impress me in any way.
Constantly trying to get you on his side, and he's just, and you're just not having any of it. You're just so done with this guy.
Like, treating him like some fucking nerd. Like, wow, yeah your gym is really
cool,
Dwayne.
Nice. I like what you've done with your tattoo. I see that you replaced the old one. Okay, yeah, still bulls. That really relates to your name,
Good
The Rock.
You.
Yep. Nice.
Oh,
goodness
house?
Me. Your little house. I love that. So back to this movie, talking about an education. I mean, like, what more could you say? It's just like all over the place. What really bugged me as well is it's not short. It's not filmed in 24 frames per second, which is like sort of the industry standard for these films. So it's just like really unsettling to watch. It felt like a handheld thing.
I'm not gonna lie.
It was awful.
I was on Instagram for a large portion of this movie because my sanity.
Good.
I just couldn't give it my full attention. I simply could not.
No. No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't give it your full attention. That's a waste of an hour and 12 minutes of your life. 100%. Yeah. So I guess, I mean, we gotta move on. There's not much to say about it. So what is your golden nugget, if you have one?
You know, as terrible as the puppets were, the puppetry was pretty creative, I guess. Someone came up with that. They were like, what's a bad creature design? And they were like, here you go. So that was, you know, that was kind of fun. That was a fun, like, little bit of the industry poking at themselves, a bit meta.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I like your straws that you're
Thank
grasping
you.
At. That's good. It's, yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. You know, someone did put a lot of, you know, there's that, like, big machine thing at the end, which the cookie gets into.
Percolator.
That's pretty cool.
Something. It was something like that.
Yeah. It was ridiculous in itself. But yeah, like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I appreciated the mechanics of that. That was nice. Yeah, I think for me, I know you hated it, but the golden nugget for me is that rhyming at the beginning, man. I have never known a sequel to have to go through the whole of the first movie again in rhyme.
Detail.
Yes, and showing flashbacks of the first movie. It was perfect in every way. And I was just like, wow, I'm so glad that I watched the first one and didn't just watch
this. In some ways,
recap
I love the humility of it. They're like, hey, you probably don't remember this movie. It was not very memorable. Here's what you need to know.
Exactly, exactly. I think that was probably the most Christmassy thing about this second film, at least, was that fact. You know, rhyming is always very Christmassy in my mind.
Poets will be thrilled to know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I always think, like, you know, Shakespeare plays are set at Christmas time. Like, all of his work is Christmas
Macbeth
work.
Famously took place over Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, it's in Scotland. It's cold. Obviously, it's Christmas.
It's basically the original A Castle for Christmas.
Exactly. Oh, that's cute, actually, thinking about it. That's actually quite lovely. You know, like, Macduff and Malcolm have this, like, weird romance. You know, then they slay Macbeth, and then, like, Malcolm's king. And it's just, like, really cute, because now Macduff's family's all been murdered. Right. So he's gonna come and live with Malcolm. And it's just like, aw, oh, they're gay together now.
I love it. I love it.
It's cute.
Actually, that leads me very neatly into what I want to do next week, Chad.
Ooh.
So
yes,
I'm just gonna say,
okay,
we would not
cool,
recommend this.
Tell me.
Don't watch it. For the love
no,
of God.
Not even a chance. No. No. If you really, really want to watch something, watch the first one. But even that, don't do it.
I thought we could do yeah. queer Christmas movies.
Queer Christmas. I like
so
it.
There was
that's
last
very cool.
year, Happiest Season came out.
Yes, we wanted, well, mm-hmm. you've seen it and you said it was brilliant.
Oh, I have mixed feelings
about
it.
So yes, I am
it.
Keen. Oh, okay. What's it called again? Happiest
I think,
Season,
yeah, I think
isn't
it's
it?
Called Happiest Season. And then a new one came out this year on Netflix. I think it's called Single All the Way.
Yes, I saw that. I've seen adverts for that.
So I thought we could, you know, last year we threw it back to Hanukkah.
Yes.
And now we're throwing it to the queers.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get all LGBTQ plus in this
yes,
house.
Yes, two incredibly heteronormative
like
people trying to
yeah.
break it down.
Let's do it. Let's get up with this. I like it. I like to well, it's also told through a heteronormative lens, I'm sure. I'm sure, like, no gay people had anything to do with either of these movies. Apart from, like, Dan Levy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I, like I said, I've got very mixed feelings about Happiest Season, and I haven't watched Single All the Way.
Okay.
I don't know how to feel.
I'm excited for this. It will be the final Christmas episode of this year, and it's. I'm glad how we're ending on it. It's been a weird Christmas, but I'm very happy about it.
Also,
yeah.
Also.
Maybe we should also just, you know, if we have time, no pressure. I just feel like we have a sort of a reputation to uphold, and we should watch the Princess
yes.
Switch.
You know
3.
What? Let's chat
so
about
if,
it in our minisode next week. We can do a whole episode on Princess
yeah.
Switch 3.
I think that's a great idea. Just like the minisode next week will be Princess okay. Switch 3. I think
I'm
that's a great
that.
Idea. Yes, fantastic. Well, guys, thank you. Well, oh, sorry, Simone. What is your gratitude for this week? I almost forgot.
My gratitude for this week is my isolation, self-quarantine mate, Rudy, without whom I would have gone completely insane being stuck inside. Mm-hmm. It was only for mm-hmm. a weekend, but, like, you know, it's the fact that you're stuck inside
yeah.
and no one else is.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It feels really shitty. It's like, yeah, when you were a kid and you were grounded. And then, I mean, you obviously don't know that because you were never grounded because you're perfect.
That's not true.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's just like you're staring out the window forlornly.
I just wanted to go for a run. And even then I was like, oh, but what if I breathe on someone? I don't know if I'm carrying. So yeah, just grateful for him
yeah.
for keeping me sane. What is your gratitude?
That's very cute. Also COVID related. So this week, my girlfriend unfortunately contracted COVID. Luckily, she's been double jabbed, so she's fine. But that is exactly what I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
You know, at the beginning of this pandemic, people were literally dying yeah. and people have died from this like time and again. And I'm just really unbelievably
yeah.
grateful that we came up with a vaccine and that my girlfriend is safe.
Yeah.
You know, she's not going to die from this. And that's huge.
Yeah.
That is, because, like, it is a death, it was
Absolutely.
A death sentence, without a question.
Absolutely.
And I'm so unbelievably grateful for the hardworking medical staff, for the wonderful South African virologists who helped, who are now sort of being, you know, vilified for the Omicron, but we're
not
going to
get
into that.
It.
But, you know, we're not going to get into it. I'm really grateful
yeah.
and I'm really thankful for everyone who has done
yeah.
their part in sort of bringing that around, because yeah, my girlfriend is still alive because of
yeah.
it, and that's huge.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And guys, like, if you haven't gotten vaccinated yet, like, I would really encourage you to do that. All of the stats that we have so far show that it vastly reduces symptoms, it vastly reduces death rates.
Yep.
Like, give yourself and your family
yep.
like the best possible chance of surviving this pandemic. Keep out of hospitals.
Yep.
Hospitals are so clogged up right now with mostly unvaccinated
yep.
people. Like, just do right by your community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Look, so like some people have experienced some side effects, but honestly, they last not
mm-hmm.
more than a week, and it's much, much more tolerable than actually getting
yeah.
COVID, and it's much safer for those around you, like someone says. And if you have had your vaccines, and you can get a booster shot if your
yeah.
country is allowing it, that is
Absolutely.
Sort of the newest guidance that's come out. Just saying, with Omicron coming out, everyone is saying sort of, you know, get that booster if you can. Yeah, hopefully we can all just get through this, guys. We won't have more variants if everyone gets fucking vaccinated. Like, it's not a hard science.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, guys, thank you so much for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. We love you very, very, very much. Let us know what movies you're watching this Christmas. Let us know what you think of the whole sort of creature feature horror films, whether you're a big fan.
Mm.
What are good creature feature horror films that might
yeah.
change our mind?
Yeah, I'd love to know what you like
we
about it.
We still want to know. Yeah, exactly. So you can do that. And where can they do that?
They can talk to us on Facebook or Instagram at Fresh Tomatoes Podcast, on Twitter at Fresh Tomatoes MP, and they can email us at freshtomatoespodcast@gmail.com.
There you have it. And as we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Bye! Goodbye.
My name is Brian Burton. It's been 26 years since the bombs fell. And since I've left the vault, I've been trying to rebuild. But this isn't the Appalachia that I remember. There's so much more to everything going on. And I promise to find the answer. So if you're out there, if you're listening, just hone in on these coordinates. Remember, there's a place for you at the end. Omega.
The Omega Broadcast Fallout Story is available on iTunes, Spotify, and many great podcasting sources.
Hey guys, so I just want to quickly talk to you about Gamefly. Now, if you haven't heard about Gamefly before, it's an online store where you can get games, movies, and so much more, all up to the latest releases. I'm talking things like Birds of Prey, Terminator, Star Wars, Knives Out, and, as we recently reviewed, Bloodshot even. So even if you want to hit up some bad movies as well as amazing movies like Parasite, you can do that, all from the comfort of your own home. You don't have to go to any stores, it's all online. And that includes game releases too, all the latest games that you could think of on any platform. All the best games right at your fingertips, as well as movies. Now being part of the Robots Radio family means that you get some pretty special perks that a lot of other people don't get. Such as, with Gamefly, if you pay just $10, you'll get a 60-day subscription. That's 30 days for free. So what we've done is we've included the link in the show notes, so just go to that link, you don't have to enter anything, you don't have to do anything else, and you'll get your 60 days only for $10. That's all the newest movies, all the newest game releases, just for $10 for 60 days. Now that's pretty spectacular. And so are you. So as we say, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Go visit Gamefly and have the best time on us.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.